Chapter 22. Raymond found the cards in the desk. They were elegant rented cards that had come with the house. They had gold edges and were imprinted with the name and the grotesque crest of a hotel maintained for the expense account set on the north side of Chicago. He dealt out the play. The Queen of Diamonds did not show in the first game. As he placed the cards precisely, his mother sat on the edge of her chair with her face buried in her hands. When she heard him squaring up the pack, she sat up straight and her face was twisted bitterly. Raymond placed the Red Queen face up on top of the deck and studied it noncommittally. "Raymond, I must talk to you about a problem with Colonel Marco, and I must talk to you as well about many other things, but there will be no time tonight. It seems that there is never time." There was a brisk knocking at the door, which she had locked. "Damn," she said, and walked to the door. "Who is it?"
"It's me, hon, Johnny. Tom Jordan is here. I need you."
"All right, lover, I'll be right out."
"Who the hell are you in there with, anyway?"
"Raymond."
"Oh. Well, hurry it up, whatever it is, hon. We have work out here."
She walked back and stood behind Raymond with her hands on his shoulders. As he watched the Red Queen, she repaired her face as best she could. Then she leaned over him and took the card. "I'll take this with me, dear," she said. "It might bring mischief if I leave it here."
"Yes, mother."
"I'll be back as soon as I can."
"Yes, mother."
She left the library, locking the door behind her. As soon as she was gone, something rattled at the terrace door. Raymond looked up just as the smiling, beautiful young woman closed the door behind her. She was dressed for the masquerade party, costumed as a playing card. The rich golden scarlet cowl fell from her crown to her shoulders. Gold-encrusted jewels banded the lush black and white ruff at her throat. The kaleidoscopic complex of inlays of metallic oranges, yellows, purples, scarlets, blacks, and whites fell to her bodice and below. From the top of her head, stiffly parallel to her shoulders, then falling at right angles, full down the sides of her body, was a white papier-mâché board on which was printed a regal Q, a red diamond standard directly below it at the left corner, while at the right there stared a large red diamond against the shining white background. It was the Queen of Diamonds, his patron and his destiny. She spoke to him.
"I saw you through my window just before we left the house," she said huskily. "My heart almost shot out of my body. I had to see you alone. Daddy went around the front way and I slipped through that old iron door in the stone wall."
Josie.
She was Josie, and she was his Queen of Diamonds. She was the Queen of Diamonds, his special lady from the stars, and she was Josie.
"Your letter.
Oh, my darling."
He moved across the room and held her by the shoulders, swaying. He looked down at her with such a force of pure love that she shivered, and they were together in love forever. He kissed her. It was the first time he had ever kissed her after having possessed her completely in imaginations through 9 risings of April and the deaths of 8 Decembers. He pulled her down on the couch and his hands fumbled with her royal clothes and royal person, while his mouth and his body sought his salvation with the only woman he would ever love and the only woman who had ever allowed him to love her, the cardboard queen he served, and the lovely girl he had adored from the moment he had come to life beside her near a lake, near a snake, within an expanding dream. Senator Jordan's costume was the toga and sandals of a Roman legislator, combined with a blanked expression. He stood next to Senator Iselin, equidistant from the marble walls at the center of the foyer. The 3 cha combo scattered sounds over them from the bottomless fountain of its noises. When the two men spoke, they spoke guardedly, like convicts in a chow line.
"I am here," Senator Jordan said to Johnny, "because my daughter asked me to come, saying that it was extremely important to her, that is to say, important to her happiness, that I come. There is no other reason, and my presence here is not to be misunderstood, nor is it to be exploited by that industry of gossip which you control. I feel loathing toward you, and for what you have done to weaken our country, and very nearly destroy our party. Is that clear?"
"That's all right, Tom. Glad to have you," Johnny said. "I was tickled when Ellie told me that we were going to be next-door neighbors."
And I am wearing this ridiculous costume because my daughter cabled ahead for it from Puerto Rico, and because she asked me to wear it, assuring me that I would be less conspicuous at this fascist party rally if I did.
It looks great on you, Tom. Great. What are you supposed to be, some kind of an athlete or something?
An intern. Furthermore, I hope none of this lunatic fringe, who are your guests tonight and who are ringing us like hyenas to watch us chat so amiably, are getting the wrong idea about me. If they link you with me, I'll take ads to repudiate you and them.
Don't give it a thought, Tom. If anything, old buddy, they're probably getting the wrong idea about me. They are very possessive about their politics. They're a great bunch, actually. You'll like them.
The restless guests moved all around them. The scent of masked ambergris mixed with abstractions of carnations and musk glands, lemon rinds, and the essences of gunpowder and tobacco. Raymond's mother came like a flung harpoon through the crowds to greet her honored guest. She shook his hand vigorously. She said again and again and again how honored they were to have him in their house. And she forgot to ask where Josie was. She asked Johnny to represent them among their other guests because she just had to have a good old-fashioned visit with Senator Tom. Before Johnny slunk away gratefully, he mumbled amenities and moved to shake hands, which Senator Jordan tactfully overlooked. Raymond's mother stopped a waiter and took his tray of 4 filled champagne glasses. She carried it off in the opposite direction from the library, followed stiffly by the senator, to the small room which was known to the domestic staff as the Senator's Den, because Johnny liked to drink in there, unshaven. It was a vivid room, vivid enough to make a narcoleptic sit up pop-eyed, with bright white carpet, black walls, and shining brass furniture with zebrine upholstery. Raymond's mother set the tray down upon the black desk with the shining brass drawer handles, then asked her neighbor to sit down as she closed the door.
"It was good of you to come over, Tom," he shrugged. "I suppose you were surprised to learn that we had taken this house."
"Surprised and appalled."
"You won't have to see much of us."
"I am sure of that."
"I would like to ask a question."
"You may."
"Will you carry this personal feeling you have for me and for Johnny over into other fields of practical politics?"
"What other fields?"
"Well, the convention, for example."
His eyebrows shot up.
"In what area of the convention?"
"Would you try to block Johnny if his name is brought forward?"
"You're joking."
"My dear Tom, you are going to go after the nomination for Johnny?" "We may be forced into that position. Your answer will help me to form the decision. A lot of Americans, you know, look upon Johnny as one of the few men willing to fight to the death for the preservation of our liberties."
"Ah."
"And I mean a lot of people. Votes. The loyal American underground is 5 million voting Americans, to say nothing of the wonderful work Frank Bollinger is doing, and with no urging from us. He says flatly that he will walk into that convention with a petition of not less than 1 million votes pledged for Johnny as a down payment on 10 million.
"You haven't answered me. Are you going after the nomination for Johnny?"
"No," she answered calmly. "We couldn't make it. But we can make the vice presidency."
"The vice presidency?"
Jordan was incredulous.
"Why would Johnny want the vice presidency?"
"Why wouldn't he?"
"Because he wants power and a big stage to dance on. There's no power in the vice presidency, and the only place where there is more power than where Johnny is right now is in the White House. Why would he want the vice presidency?"
"I answered your question, Tom, but you haven't answered mine."
"What question?"
"Will you block us?"
"Block you? I would spend every cent I own or could borrow to block you. I have contempt for you and fear for you, but mostly I fear for this country when I think of you. Johnny is just a low clown, but you are the smiler who wraps a dagger in the flag and waits for your chance, which I pray may never come. I tell you this. If at that convention, 1 month from now, you begin to deal with the delegations to cause Johnny's name to be put on that ticket, or if in my canvass of all delegations, which will begin on my telephone tomorrow, I learn that you are so acting, I'm going to bring impeachment proceedings against your husband on the floor of the Senate, and I will hit him with everything in my carefully documented book."
Raymond's mother came out of her chair, spitting langrily.